You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're eating chicken sandwiches right now. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and we're not really eating chicken sandwiches, but if you out there are also wondering what the fuck is going on with our obsession with chicken sandwiches right now and places that serve chicken sandwiches, then you have landed yourself in the right place. You have found the right podcast to listen to. And why don't you tell one of your friends about that too, so we can all try to figure out together what the fuck is the issue with chicken sandwiches and chicken sandwiches establishments. Joining me this trip to perhaps solve this mystery from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Yeah, speak for yourself, but I was eating a chicken sandwich just then, so, you know.
You finished that very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Hello, I'm in the nation's capital, which is obsessed with all sorts of things, not the least of which are chicken sandwiches. But here, you can't actually get into one of these chicken sandwich establishments, which is surprisingly difficult to say. And it's because the line's out the door. So, at least in the nation's capital, we are okay with hate sandwiches.
Ooh. Also joining us from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's been a great week. It's fucking hot and muggy still here. I wish this whole week, 2 weeks of summer that we get in California would go away and go back to regular weather.
I know, warm weather.
I left Baltimore because it was too hot.
I loved it the other day when people were complaining about the humidity. And I was like, well, let's check what the humidity is in Florida. And it was exactly the same humidity as in Florida. And I was like, all you fuckers have been talking shit about Florida as if it has this absurd level of humidity. And look, it's the same level here. I was enjoying that.
I live in a desert. Yeah,
meanwhile,
right?
Meanwhile, the East Coast has a hurricane and it's 100 degrees every day here with 99% humidity. So, woohoo.
That's over in flyover country, though.
Do you serve hate chicken on your menu, William?
No, but for a while, this was years and years ago, there was like this turkey shortage, and we had to switch from turkey to chicken, and there were tears. There were tears. People want turkey.
I'm really confused right now. The East Coast is flyover country, so you just fly from L.A. to Europe? Is that what happens?
Well, yeah, everyone knows you're supposed to go to someplace in Europe. Why stop in D.C.?
If not Europe, at least Canada.
Oh, I see what you did there. Let's talk about what the hell is going on in Canada in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
It really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
If you enjoy how this podcast runs like a well-oiled machine, then why don't you become a Patreon subscriber, patreon.com/themidside, where you can go and give us a couple dollars every time we produce one of these things, one of these highly produced, professional shows. So, Canada has been in the news a lot lately on the midside, and not the least of which for its absurdity, as you might expect, because Canada. And this week, over 100 protesters crashed what would otherwise be a celebratory occasion in Canada, a opening of a Chick-fil-A in Toronto. So, the American food chain has over 2,300 locations in the U.S., and it opened a store on Yonge and Bloor Streets, which are the most Canadian-sounding streets we could have picked for this story. But a few minutes before, protesters marched up with their signs condemning the restaurant's ties to anti-LGBT LGBTQ2 groups two. And beliefs.
Yeah, William, can you explain that one before we go
there's
deeper here?
There's a two now. There's a number.
Is this and a sequel?
I don't
like,
know
was
why.
Was the other group replaced?
I don't know why, but in Canada, Two-Spirit is included in the alphabet soup. But not...
Oh.
Wait, are we missing
I thought
letters?
It was like a...
I don't know.
There's no
I thought it was like
here.
The next edition of the iPhone. Now with
Wait,
new features.
So Two-Spirit is they specifically support a Native American guy? He's so important.
Know.
He's just part of this group now.
I don't know.
So, Two-Spirit. The family-run chicken chain, i.e. Chick-fil-A, was just decimated in 2012 by protesters when CEO Dan Cathy, a devout Southern Baptist, was accused of being against same-sex marriage. Cathy was quoted in an interview with Baptist Press saying, "We are very much supportive of the family, the biblical definition of the family unit." Hate speech! The company's foundation has also donated millions over the years to groups critical of LGBTQ2. Okay, so...
I want to see this critical statement on the Two-Spirit. And the asexual. I want to see this.
Yes. So, Justin, this is a CEO who has beliefs and uses his money to further those beliefs. Is that sort of a non-story? And don't all CEOs use their money to further their beliefs? And then why are we still protesting if this happened in 2012 and gay marriage is basically legal everywhere in the two countries that we're talking about?
Well, the first thing
is two countries.
Canada represents the U.S. and Canada. Yeah,
Canada's the gay version of the U.S.
Oh, those are fighting words for some midsiders out there. Well, first of all, there was a little detail in there that I've heard, and it's about the company's foundation, not just the owner. We previously talked about the owners of companies and the employees of companies, right? And we said what they do as private citizens doesn't reflect the company and the company shouldn't be punished for it. But I ask you, where is the line when the company's foundation, which has the company's name, donates to certain charities?
The line is apparently on unpronounceable name street. In
Yonge
Toronto.
And Boer Street.
There,
and it's out
the
door.
Is. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's the first thing, right?
Yes.
The second thing is, I don't understand like this indirect protest. If your problem is the charity, protest the fucking charity. Like, aren't you being ineffective by protesting Chick-fil-A? I get it. Like, yeah, don't go there. Don't go there. You don't want your money to go to this charity, so don't go there. But if the harm is being caused by the charity, why are you going to the company? It's sort of like if your mom gives you an allowance and then you use that allowance to commit a crime, do you then go protest the mother? It doesn't make any sense. It's indirect. And
yes,
then the second thing is this
allowance privilege
charity that they're giving to so bad that everyone has to stop going to Chick-fil-A? I fully support your right to boycott whatever company you want. If you don't want to go to that company because you don't like what that company is doing with the money, that's fine. But is it so evil of a charity that, A, the charity is still legal, and B, nobody can go there because you don't want to go there?
William, if you had to boycott every company, let's just go back to every restaurant chain whose board of directors, CEOs, foundations, those related entities supported causes you disagreed with, would you ever eat in a restaurant again?
No, because they all spout global warming nonsense. I would literally
yes.
have to farm my own food.
Yes.
And even then I would run into trouble because I wouldn't be able to get any fertilizer because most of the fertilizer companies are spouting that nonsense too. Yeah,
I mean,
it doesn't make any sense.
At what point
shouldn't
do we just eat chicken sandwiches?
do you fight bad ideas? I think we're getting hung up on the protests a little bit, and for once, we should actually be psychologicalizing like Justin always does. So come with me on a journey where I do the...
Come with me to a world of pure imagination.
The problem here is they're not trying to solve a problem. If you have a charity you think is doing something wrong, and like Justin says, I don't mean criminally wrong. The answer is not to try and destroy their donors, right?
Right.
The answer is to start another charity. And if you don't like Chick-fil-A sandwiches or what they do with your money once they get it, then, yeah, absolutely, don't give them your money. But I don't like what a lot of people do with their money, but that's the beauty of trade, is that I don't have to care. I know in the long term that if they do something irrational with their money, it's not going to hurt me.
Yeah. Now, lest you think America is immune to this sort of nonsense, a Kansas University faculty member, a couple of them actually, are not fans of allowing Chick-fil-A to be served on their campus, the Kansas University campus, because it violates the rules for safety and inclusion, as it is a, quote, bastion of bigotry. And so Jayhawks professors are unhappy with the Chick-fil-A moving in there. To me, this feels like the same kind of thing when people lay down in the middle of a highway to protest whatever the hell it is they're protesting, global warming or racism or whatever. Just from a persuasion tactic, Justin, who is this convincing?
Well, I think that's where William was getting into the psychologicalizing, or whatever we say, whatever William's weird pronunciation was, where they're not convincing anyone. They're grandstanding to make themselves
psychologicalizing.
When we psychologicalize these people, they're just grandstanding to make themselves feel better. That's all this is. I mean, it's really just a cry for attention, because the reason they feel so threatened by Chick-fil-A is because they themselves just feel threatened on a daily basis because they're uncomfortable with who they are. I mean, William is very comfortable with who he is, so that's why he's not threatened by this kind of thing, because of what he just said, that if they're irrational, it will hurt them, not him. But these people are so threatened that they do these things because they're trying to get the world to see them.
Yeah, makes sense to me. And just in case you're wondering where the Q went, it ended up in America. So the professors at KU were worried about the marginalized LGBTQ people. So we traded the two for
the whole.
The whole, Justin?
The whole, yeah. Well, you guys were riffing on the two, and I didn't want to stop that because the two is the funniest thing ever. But with the whole, like, we can't let them on campus because of their fucked up beliefs, somebody needs to start making a website where we just list everything wrong with everything, like call it problematic.com or something.
Reddit.
So like we can just, whenever this happens, it's like, we're going to take Chick-fil-A out, but we're going to put in Burger King. Oh, well that supports, you know, the monarchy, and that supports feudalism. So we can't have,
and it's sexist. It's Burger King.
Yeah, and it's sexist, right? So, you know, and Wendy's is, you know, it's utilizing the gingers as a mascot, as if gingers are like an animal or something. I mean, if we can't do Redskins, we can't do Wendy's because they're gingers. So, what are we going to put in there instead? What are we going to put in there instead?
Well, it's certainly not going to be McDonald's, because they're off the woke bandwagon after it turns out that their paper straws can't even be recycled in the most McDonald's move ever. So last year, it axed its plastic straws throughout the UK, that is McDonald's, but the US fast food says that their new paper straws are not really easy to be recycled and should probably put into general waste. McDonald's says that the materials are technically recyclable, but their thickness makes it difficult for them to be processed.
Yeah.
Man, if I had a nickel for every time I heard that.
He'd have a nickel.
No nickels. Okay. As a result of customer feedback, we have strengthened our paper straws, so while the materials are recyclable, their current thickness makes it difficult for them to be processed by our waste solution providers, a McDonald's spokesperson says. So, Justin, basically McDonald's made an unusable paper straw usable, thus making it not woke. What a great metaphor.
This was submitted by Midsider Megan, and I had to include this story because I think we are the world leaders on this story, this anti-paper straw movement. We've been ahead of the curve on this, and we continue to be, and this is just another example of it. I don't remember if we've talked about this on the show or not, but did you know they can make straws, plastic straws, from, like, corn?
Yeah,
or what
plants.
Is it? From plants, that's it, from plants. Even if it's from corn, who gives a fuck, right? We have so much corn with the fucking corn surplus because all the corn subsidies, we might as well do that. But yeah, they can make it from plants. So they literally could make plastic straws that are biodegradable, but they don't. They're trying to get us to use these paper straws. If this is not proof that this is all just to make us feel guilty, to make us feel bad and have some way to shame us on a daily basis and make us suffer on a daily basis, I don't know what is. It's all about making us feel like we have to suffer for what we did wrong, that we have to pay for our sins. It's got nothing to do with saving the environment, because if they were really saving the environment, this shit wouldn't happen. Paper straws don't really do anything for the environment, just the same way recycling doesn't.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge waste of our time.
It's
William, should we all start bringing... Should we all start bringing our own sin straws out to restaurants with us?
That's what my business partner's fiance. That's what she does. She brings metal straws everywhere because she can't stand the paper straws.
Now we're getting really technical here. I feel like the metal straws mess with my drinking mojo. I don't know, it's because they're cold or it's a metallic taste, or I can't get on board with the metal straws. Is there something I'm missing?
No, I agree it's the metallic taste, because one of the problems I have with, like, the water bottle I carry every day and bring to the gym is if I let water sit in there too long, it starts to taste metallic, so I have to dump it out and put new water in there and make sure I drink it before it has a metallic taste. There is a reason that over the years humanity went towards plastic straws. It has to do with taste. It has to do with performance. And now we are going against the progress of plastic straws. What's your joke, William?
Performance and not easy to be processed.
Yep, mm-hmm. Too thick. Performance.
Some hot mid-side talk here this morning.
Did we switch to a Viagra commercial in the middle of this story? Well, I don't know to you guys, but I love the quote from the woke warrior at the end that says, "Lips have been waste-free alternative to straws for millions of years." That also is a sexual innuendo, now that I think about it. But
lips have been waste-free alternative to straws.
I would like someone to explain to me, without using a plastic spoon or a plastic straw, exactly how does one consume a milkshake?
Well, you get it dumped on you.
Oh, yeah, we're going to cover that later on.
Foreshadowing.
Also,
no, that's exactly right, William. I mean, there are other purposes to the straw. Like, it's a cleanliness issue.
Yeah.
Not to mention, it helps people with disabilities. So, there's that.
And it's just...
You have a difficult time.
It just makes things taste better, too. There's certain things that are meant to be enjoyed that way.
I don't...
Enjoy? Enjoy?
That
How dare
is the word.
You? That
Thank
is
you.
That is fascist, that is patriarchal, that is racist. How dare you want to enjoy things?
There we go. We hit the word of the day.
I feel like this story and the previous story is going to connect directly to our trailer takedowns, rehashing of old stories. I feel like we're stuck back in 2012.
If only
well, someone
we
who
were
wishes
back in 2012.
Was,
2012 wasn't this bad, was it?
But we saw it coming. That was the problem in 2012. We saw it. We were looking into the binoculars of the future, and we were yelling into these microphones that the social justice warriors are coming for your straws and also desalinate the ocean. And no one listened to us.
Joe Rogan talks about desalinating the ocean, but it's actually further back than 2012. I was reading my old blog, and I have a post from 2010 talking about someone complaining about rape culture and Firefly. So it's it's even farther back than 2012 we were calling it, just to be, if we're talking about calling our shot, I just want to be clear.
That's right.
Well, I've been saying this my whole life.
Someone who wishes he was back in 2012 is Jussie Smollett, who is potentially being sued by the city of Chicago for his quote-unquote hoax, but his attorneys are arguing that Jussie Smollett should not have to pay these things because the police didn't need to investigate so thoroughly. Yes. Jussie Smollett's attorneys have filed a motion arguing that the actor should not have to pay Chicago $130,000 for a police investigation into what he claimed was a racist and homophobic attack because he couldn't have known how much time and money the department would spend looking into his allegations. Duh. The motion, filed this week by the former actor in the television series Empire, maintains that Smollett did not stage the attack, as the Chicago Police Department alleges. But the motion also suggests that it wasn't necessary to spend 1,800 hours of police overtime and untold hours of non-overtime police work on the investigation after Smollett reported he was the victim of an attack in downtown Chicago in January. According to the motion, filing of a police report in and of itself does not necessitate a sprawling investigation, nor does it, as a practical matter, usually result in an investigation as extensive as the one Chicago Police Department chose to undertake. The attorneys also argue all police report does is enable, quote, the police and prosecutors to decide whether and how to investigate. Justin, is there some odd kernel of truth in this otherwise insanely farcical argument?
I'm glad you asked that question, because that was what I was going to ask you. Specifically, presumably the argument they're going to make in court, at least the argument I would make if I were arguing this, is aren't there more important crimes to investigate than a whiny gay guy who's on a marginal TV show saying he had a hate crime against him? Aren't there larger, more important crimes? Or is it the only reason they investigated this because of media coverage?
So nothing isn't going on in Chicago that would require investigation, Justin. It is a city of angels.
Well, exactly. So because of everything that goes on in Chicago, wouldn't you want to maybe solve the violence problem in Chicago rather than spend all government money investigating
this? No, they absolutely would not. Because that's dangerous.
I think the problem, I actually like this argument from a legal standpoint. I think it's not going to work in the motion to dismiss, but it certainly is a preview of, if this goes to trial, what his lawyers will be arguing, which is take it out of this charge situation. Let's say this won't work for Justin. I'm trying to think of another example. Let's say you fell asleep behind the wheel. You end up hitting a parked car.
Were you going to say a DUI?
Yes. You decide to drive home, and then you file a police report saying that,
just say I got in the car to drive right after I saw Army of the Dead on Netflix.
All right.
When it's released.
saying that someone hit you, right? That your car was struck. And then the police, you know, spend 3 weeks of overtime investigating it. Should you, with this law about recovering costs, like, is that reasonable for them to have spent, you know, 3 weeks of 60 officers in overtime to investigate your hit and run report, your false hit and run report?
Now, for me, just the random normal person who just got really jazzed off of watching Zack Snyder's new movie on Netflix. No, that's not. I'm just average Joe citizen. But I think, to say the other side of the coin here, Daniel, doesn't it change things because a major actor came into Chicago and said this happened, like a celebrity? Doesn't that change things?
The best case argument on that side, even though I think it maybe in a overly platonic world it shouldn't, the best case argument on that side is that the consequence of the big actor thing was the news it made and how much attention was brought to this for the city and how important it was for the city to get this right for, you could say, for tourism purposes or just for sort of general
no,
city
no,
reputation
hold on.
Purposes.
Hold on. The reason they had to investigate it is because he described someone wearing a MAGA hat in downtown Chicago. This could not be tolerated. It wasn't the violence against Jesse Smollett. Black people are dying in the streets in Chicago. That's not the problem. The problem were there were apparently, allegedly, two people wearing MAGA hats in downtown Chicago. This was not acceptable.
They had to weed those people out. Now, I still think that that argument fails because it doesn't take a crack investigative team to figure out that he's lying, and you have cameras everywhere in Chicago. So I'm not sure what they were actually
doing.
Argument
there? I mean, why did it cost so much money to investigate then?
Well, that's what I'm saying is I feel like it was the numbers were padded. So I'm saying that even that argument about the salaciousness of this and the media profile somewhat fails because it's still an absurd amount of time to spend even on that sort of thing.
So here's an interesting theory then, Daniel. Hmm. How conspiratorial do you want to push this?
Last week we went all Alex Jones, so anything less than that is acceptable.
Right, so the aliens are trying to steal money from Jussie Smollett. No, to take a step back on the conspiracy, is it possible the cops filed overtime knowing they were eventually going to sue this actor because they thought it would be a slam dunk way to get free money and get funding from this actor?
Well, I mean, conspiratorial or not, we know that governments like to bilk rich people to fund their various ventures. So whether or not they actually spent 1,800 hours or if they just sort of shuffled the paperwork and said, we're going to cover these 1,800 hours of work that we did on other things with this newfound income, you know, one way or the other. It's not super conspiratorial. Governments do it all the time. And I know we're supposed to think that all police in all circumstances are heroes, but I don't. I do think they keep us safe. So thank you, police officers out there. But not all of you are upstanding human beings.
Definitely not the Chicago police, who have no involvement with the mob in history.
Also, a side story about police that's only tangentially related is there was a Ninth Circuit ruling yesterday about whether or not police should get something called qualified immunity in this one case. Qualified immunity is the idea that if the police don't know that what they're doing is wrong or unconstitutional, then they can't be prosecuted for it, even if it's a crime, if they didn't know it was a crime, like if it wasn't, quote unquote, clearly established law. And so yesterday's ruling was police officers are accused of stealing $150,000 worth of collectibles and rare coins from this guy during a otherwise legal search of his home. And the judge in the Ninth Circuit ruled that the officers indeed receive qualified immunity, i.e. can't be sued for stealing $150,000, because at the time of the theft, there was no clearly established constitutional right to not be stolen from when you are being searched pursuant to a warrant. Did you know that, Justin? That you did not have a right to not be stolen from by the police if they have a warrant? Think about that for a second.
No, I didn't know that, and that's good to know that that's legal precedent now, because that means that your private property, your private residence, is only subject to the government deciding to leave you alone. Because that means the second the government decides, based on that ruling, the second the government decides we want to go into your place, everything in your place actually belongs to them. So,
that's right.
California police, I hope you're Funko Pop collectors.
If it pleases the crown, could you not steal from me when you're in my home? Thank you. So anyway, that was a little legal tangent there because I'm somewhat tired of, Dave Chappelle calls him, Jussie Smollett and the nonsense around his story. But I'm never tired about talking about milkshakes. Yes. So Rolling Stone has an what do you call this?
Expose.
Yes. An expose about how a, quote, a right-wing troll managed to manipulate the mainstream media. The subtitle for this is, when a milkshake to the face brought the spotlight on Andy Ngo, politicians and talking heads on both sides were happy to take up his cause, demonizing Antifa.
Both sides?
So this article is as poorly written as most Rolling Stone articles are, but the idea here is that Andy Ngo, who is a journalist who covers Antifa rallies, when he was assaulted at a recent rally in Portland in June, basically he was trolling the media to get attention, and that the media basically went along with him in denouncing Antifa, when in fact Antifa, you know, the people who are throwing milkshakes at people and also hitting people with bike locks and smashing windows, etc., are the good guys. Didn't you know that, Justin, that Antifa is actually just keeping you safe because it stands for anti-fascist? Duh. What say you, Justin?
I have no idea what to do with this article, Daniel. I William, one of you is going to have to explain to me what the fuck is going on. Because I read this entire article.
And then you were convinced he was a right-wing troll, right?
Well, that's the point I got to. I wasn't convinced. But the point I got to was either I haven't completely misunderstood reality over the entirety of my life, or this is all a fat fucking lie. And it's very strange to me to read an article in that way that is that disconnected from reality. I mean, this can only be a propaganda hit piece in favor of Antifa, can it not? I mean, that can only be the purpose of this article. I can't think of any other purpose besides that, because it seems to me the heart of this article, what they're trying to get at here, is he has all this harmful footage on Twitter, right? He goes to the rallies and he just walks in the rallies. And I've never seen him antagonize them in his footage. And I've seen all the things they do to people that don't even have anything to do with him, right? All this footage he has on Twitter is people have nothing to do with him. So it seems like this article is basically trying to get you to ignore that footage, to disregard that footage. It sees that footage as a threat. So they had to write an article to say that that footage was a result of him antagonizing. So the idea is, well, the only time that people don't see what he's doing is when the camera is off. So we're just going to create doubt into what he's doing when the camera's off. And they're saying that he's antagonizing and trolling Antifa into doing these things. Then he presses roll on the camera. That seems to be the only purpose of this article.
I especially love the argument in the article where they bring up one of his stories, which I remember when it came out, I quite enjoyed it, about the he interviewed one of several gay members of the Proud Boys, and you know, that's an interesting story, right? Because we're told the Proud Boys is alt-right, and that they're, you know, fascists and Nazis and all these things, right? And it's like, oh no, this is some gay on gay violence, right? Well, I'm assuming there's at least one gay Antifa member.
How dare you assume their gender?
That's true. Maybe they're two-spirited.
They're two-faced.
Maybe that's why we don't have the two-spirit. We just call them Antifa. That's evidence of him being a troll. Also evidence of him being a troll, he once tweeted about a religious panel and was critical of Islam, of the Islamic representative on the panel, and was fired from a newspaper. And then you're just like, as I go through the examples, these are the best examples they have of him trolling. Have they ever been to 4chan? Do they even know what trolling is?
No, they absolutely do not.
On the other side, is Antifa so easily manipulated that all you have to do is once write a tweet critical of Islam, and then from then on, Antifa is allowed to bash your face in?
Is this not the ultimate example of the pot calling the kettle a troll? Because please remember that Rolling Stone has had enormous, high-profile, fraudulent journalism in the past 10 years, multiple times, not the least of which, in fact, maybe the most the most egregious of which was the UVA rape story, which was basically entirely fabricated, except that they made a huge deal out of it and then went on to defend it before finally having to admit that it was entirely made up. Rolling Stone is not some bastion of journalistic integrity. It's not the New York Times.
I think that this story will get a Pulitzer Prize.
It may very well, but that tells you more about the corruption of the journalistic system than it does about Rolling Stone, since this magazine and its writers and its editors are propaganda artists and are in no way actually here to give you objective truth about anything.
Yeah, this I know that we've mentioned this before, but I wanna put this in our evidence pile for social justice being a religion. This reads like something out of the Watchtower or some of those other deeply religious magazines, right? It's completely strawmanning a person using words that with very strange definitions, right? And like assuming a ton of information that only those in the woke left, understand. It is a religious propaganda article.
Yeah, unequivocally. So we've talked about this on the show before, but just, you know, talking about how you can start reading into things, whether or not they are actually being objective and reporting on things or whether or not they are trying to lead you in a direction. Just look for a lot of adjectives, for a lot of descriptions of simple things that end up being complex. Look for language that is supposed to make you feel a certain way, is supposed to learn a specific thing. And this article hits all those. This would have failed 10 years ago, hopefully, any first assignment in a journalism class. Certainly all the journalism classes I took by an actual journalist, someone who cared about truth and not about feelings, she would have decimated this article as pure propaganda nonsense.
Yeah, it's hard. It's honestly hard for me to process. It was hard for me to process the subtitle. Daniel, I know you got it pulled up there. We'll read the subtitle one more time.
As you were saying that, I was closing the window, but I will open it again. This is how good this show is, how well we communicate with each other. When a milkshake to the face brought the spotlight on Andy Ngo, politicians and talking heads on both sides were happy to take his cause, demonizing Antifa.
Yeah, that word demonizing Antifa. Demonizing. That is what the left does in their, as William's saying, religiously. Demonizing is the perfect religious word, and their religious social justice movement, that is what the left does. Left not earlier in this podcast demonizing Chick-fil-A?
It's funny that you picked up on that part and I picked up on the beginning part. It was just a milkshake to the head.
Yeah, I mean, that's gaslighting Andy Ngo right there, isn't it?
Yeah. How dare you be so fragile as to have cracked your skull? I mean, it was just a milkshake to the head. And you did it on purpose, right? I mean, you wanted to crack your skull on purpose, but also it was just a milkshake to the head.
Yeah, how dare you walk into a place where people are saying they're going to hit you in the head with things? I mean,
he was asking for it, by the way, ludicrous.
That's right. Maybe you shouldn't wear such a short skirt next time.
I can't, Justin.
I just want you to be assured that when you read something like this, you do not have to think maybe my entire perception of reality, my entire life is off. Okay. Turn up the self-esteem 1% and say, clearly, this article is written by a lunatic who is only out to further a religion and has no interest in actually informing his readers about what the world is like.
Okay, so first of all, your point is taken, and I will reflect on that. That is something I need to reflect on. But you realize I was being a bit rhetorical and over the top by saying that, right?
No, I only assume you're literal all the time.
Okay. Because I do, look, I literally believe we're at a point in our country that's very dangerous, in our history that's very dangerous, because there are two sides that literally believe the other side is crazy. And to me, when we get to two sides that are like that, there's only one way to resolve that conflict, and that scares the shit out of me. Because I literally believe, like, when I read something like this, I go, well, either you're crazy or I'm crazy, and I know I ain't crazy. So how are we going to resolve this besides you trying to kill me or people?
Drugs. Lots and lots of drugs and psychological counseling.
You think that that's going to work?
No, but it'll be fun on the way down.
It's still, as a straight edge person, lots and lots of drugs also scares me. So you get the point I'm making. I was being over the top, although the fact that that thought even crossed my mind demonstrates my history of low self-esteem. So thank you, Daniel, for pointing that out to all the listeners.
Anytime I can put you down.
But I do think this is a warning sign. I think the more these things are said, the more this kind of thing happens. I mean, did you see the article this week that they called Dave Chappelle a white supremacist?
Ah, called it. Didn't we call that?
Probably, yes. Didn't we call that? Dave Chappelle called it.
I thought it was William who said, like, we're 10 articles away from Dave Chappelle being called a white supremacist.
I believe so.
Yeah, so you were actually wrong on the number. It was like one article away. So, but that's my point. I mean, that's my point. When it gets to this extreme, I just don't know any other way to resolve it, and it scares the shit out of me. So I want to move next to Disney World, because when shit goes down, you know Disney is going to be okay. So, yeah. All right, speaking of things going insane and people going crazy and not being able to deal with trauma properly, I'm going to review It Chapter 2 in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. As I already mentioned during the news segment, Midsider Megan submitted the McDonald's paper straw story in Discord. That is why you should join Discord. Daniel just mentioned my self-esteem issues. Honestly, the reason I want you to join Discord is whenever you post something I agree with, I'm like, yeah, and my self-esteem goes up for like 10 minutes. So if you guys could all just join Discord and keep posting things so I get self-esteem hits every 10 minutes, that would be great and make my life a lot better. But no, seriously, join Discord. It's fun. It's good to have a community where things are reflected back to you that are healthy. And I mean that in a serious way, right? We don't want to be second-handed in these kind of ways, but we do want. It's good to have that community. It's good, you know, when Midsider Megan posted that, it did, you know, it did bring a smile to my face, and it did make my life a little bit better, because that is something I've objectively assessed on my own and seen the horribleness of. So to have compatriots who have those similar ideas is nice. So join the Discord, because even if it doesn't help the show, it helps our lives be better. It'll help your life be better. Last night, only a few hours ago, because I went to a late showing and it's a 3-hour movie, I saw It Chapter 2. It Chapter 2 is the sequel to It. The movie is based on the book by Stephen King. The book is very long. It's split into two chapters. The first chapter of the movie is the kids and dealing with the clown. So the clown comes into Derry and tries to kill all these kids, and they get away. The second movie is 27 years later. They come back to the town of Derry because they made a pledge to each other that if It comes back, they will kill it for good. The interesting thing about this movie is twofold. One, and I'm going to get this out of the way really quickly, there's a whole meta element to this, where the ending of the book is notorious for being batshit insane, where at the end there's a giant spider that can only be beaten by a giant turtle, so the giant turtle helps the grown kids, the adults, beat the giant spider, because the giant spider came from space, and is trying to use psychology to manipulate the world to have its little spider space spider babies take over the world. It's a batshit insane ending. And the movie at the very beginning is making fun of that, where it has one of the characters is an author and everyone's telling him how they like his books, but they hate his endings, which I thought was a really interesting way to make fun of Stephen King. Because to me, even the Dark Tower series, I read it, I'm like, yeah, this is a lot of good setup, but it never fucking goes anywhere. So I stopped reading it. And then Stephen King actually has like a Stan Lee cameo in the movie. And it's like, dude, you realize they just ripped on you? But I guess the guy has enough money that he doesn't give a fuck, right? I mean, as long as he can go to Red Sox games, he doesn't care. So dude's in a major movie. It's going to print money. And they ripped the shit out of him. So that was kind of cool from that meta angle that they changed the ending from the book. And they had that in there. But really what this is a continuation of is the trauma theme from the first movie. So the first movie was very much about like trauma and how it infects you when you're young. Well, in this movie, their friend Mike, who's lived in Derry his whole life, the town, calls them to come back to Derry because he's like, it's back. But when they come back, they don't have memories of what happened or the town until they come back to the town. You know, now this is played off as part of the powers of it, part of the powers of the evil force that manipulates you psychologically. But really what they're talking about is the way trauma makes you forget things, right? This is psychologically proven that it makes you forget things because you try to repress it. And then that all this trauma comes back and it starts messing with these people as adults, and they have to overcome that and not be afraid anymore in order to beat it at the end. And the way they beat it, and this is a spoiler, so if you want to see the movie and don't want to be spoiled, pause for a few seconds. The way they beat it at the end is they convince it. So the whole two movies, it is convincing them that they're afraid and there are all these things to be afraid of that aren't real. And in the end, they convince it that it's small rather than a giant spider. They convince it that, oh, it's small. It's not terrifying. It's just a small little creature. And when it becomes that small, they're able to take its heart out and crush its heart. So I thought that was a really interesting way to concretize dealing with trauma and fear. And that's what the horror genre should do. So I was watching this movie and I was very surprised at how much I enjoyed it. And I was very surprised at how much I enjoyed chapter one. And as I was watching it, I just had this sense of this is a movie that will last the test of time. And I don't have that sense often. It's not often that I watch a movie and I'm like, wow, that's a classic right there. That's a classic. You know, I've had stronger emotional reactions, although this movie did make me cry a couple times. I've had stronger emotional reactions where I'm like, yeah, that's an amazing movie. But to sit there and say, you know, that's a classic in today's day and age with the amount of content that's coming out, to say something's a classic, to have that reaction, I think that speaks very well of this movie. And then the final thing I'll say about this is, not surprisingly, I went and looked at the reviews and it's only got a 65% on Rotten Tomatoes. People are complaining that it doesn't have the batshit ending of the book. And people are saying it's not as good as part one. Now, I haven't seen part one since I saw it in theaters, so I can't make that comparison. But these are movies that build off of each other. So my initial impression is they're both equally as good as each other. And you could see each individually and they would be good on their own, or you could see them together and they'd be even better. So even the fact that this is only at 65% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think that speaks to the fact that there's something very powerful in here. And at one point in the movie, it made a very interesting point. One of the kids was reflecting on growing up because they use flashbacks in this movie a lot. And in reflecting on growing up, he talked about how it can be often that the good memories leave us and are more fleeting than the bad memories are. The bad memories stay with us, where the good memories don't stay with us as much. And I thought that was a very interesting look into human psychology, that in some ways we're shaped more by the more infrequent negative experiences that we go through than we are all the positive things. I mean, Daniel, something you talk about all the time that's really stuck with me is, you know, just all the positive things you have in your life every day. You know, when you joke about influencers and you're like, well, they want to have the experience of X, Y, and Z. What about the experience of having a roof over my head, of owning a house? And you know, we talk about capitalism and all the positive effects it has. People sort of take those for granted. And then the society we're living in is very largely motivated by the trauma the people experience, which in the history of the world and in the context of their life is less frequent. And I thought the movie did a great point of showing that, because all these people experience a level of success when they leave the town. But when they come back to the town, what they experience really takes over their lives. So I think there's a lot interesting going on. I would say you should see this movie if you just want to see a good movie. You just want to see a good movie. You shouldn't see this movie if you're not going to be able to look past the horror elements at all. There were only a couple jump scares that really got me. Otherwise, I didn't really find it scary. I found it more of a fantasy movie on the demonic side with the way it was portraying evil. But it portrayed evil as that. It was evil and it needed to be beaten because it was hurting these people and hurting the town and wanted to hurt the planet. So I thought that was good. And Daniel, just to rest your mind, the spider wasn't done in a scary way. And I realized something. Maybe you can back me up on this or not. What scares me about spiders is actually the face of the spider. Because what they did was they had spider legs with the giant clown face and everything. And it wasn't scary to me. So I think what scares me about spiders is the pinchers and the eyes and everything.
Interesting. I'm scared by all of it. Also clowns. No, not really, but funny that you were not scared by a clown spider when I think that is the sort of mashup of many people's nightmares.
Yeah, it didn't. I was really like there are scenes in Harry Potter that I have not seen. Because there's like the giant spiders in the forest. And then the giant spider at the end of Lord of the Rings, whichever one of that scares the shit out of me. When I go on the Harry Potter ride, the Forbidden Journey, the two times I've been on it in my life, I screamed like a little baby. The first time I didn't know there were spiders. The second time I forgot there were spiders. And the second time I was screaming, I was like, oh my God, trauma. I forgot there were spiders on this ride. Oh my God, stop. And I'm just screaming. It was terrifying, but I don't know. The way this movie did it, it didn't scare me. And I appreciated that because I was really worried I wasn't going to be able to watch the climax of this movie. All right. It sounds like nobody else has anything to say about this movie. So why don't we talk about movies that are going to come out rather than talk about a movie that has come out? As always, I post Trailer Takedown on the website on usually by Saturday morning at the latest, and you can watch those trailers before the episode, after the episode, during the episode. You can, you know, pause, listen to us, pause, watch the trailer, however you want to do it, whatever order you want to do it.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Gretel and Hansel is a... I don't even know what the fuck this movie is, okay? Look, this is a retelling of Hansel and Gretel, but because of Me Too, they put Gretel first. I don't know. Like, I guess the premise is now that Gretel leads Hansel into the woods. Wasn't she always the older sister, or were they always the same age? I don't know. I don't understand. The only thing interesting about this movie is I hope it turns into a hidden prequel to First Contact, because Alice Krieg, who plays the Borg Queen, plays the evil witch in this movie. So that's the only thing I can hope. Otherwise, this just looks terrible. Tackle.
Yeah, nothing new in this that seemed exciting, interesting, or otherwise thought-provoking other than the switch of the name, which bodes terribly for it. I wouldn't even want to watch a remake of Hansel and Gretel, let alone Gretel and Hansel. Tackle.
It's creative. It's new. The name is out of order. What? No, thanks. Tackle.
Second trailer.
Jexy is a movie about a guy who buys a smartphone and then the AI in it becomes obsessed with him and wants to take over his life. Gentlemen, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't this a bit in Forgetting Sarah Marshall when her and Russell Brand are at dinner with Mila Kunis and the main character, who's the actor, Jason Segel, when they're at dinner at that restaurant at the Hawaiian resort, aren't they making fun of a movie that Sarah Marshall did that her cell phones went evil and started attacking people?
That's right. I forgot about that. Good recall.
That's like the funniest bit in that movie, like the way they riff on that and everything. And now they made an actual movie about this, where in it, Adam Devine, who... Maybe one of you two can explain to me how Adam Devine is funny. I've never found him funny in my life. He's the guy in Workaholics. He was in... wow, my brain is fucking farting right now. The a cappella movies.
Pitch?
Yeah, Pitch Perfect. That's
Pitch
it.
Perfect?
He was in something. Pitch Perfect. I think 1 and 2. I don't remember if he was in 3, but because 3 was terrible, one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And he brings his comedic... I use that word loosely, stylings to this movie. There is nothing in this movie that is appealing to me. Except maybe there's a half-baked premise in here that could be good on some level. But then again, also, didn't they already do that better when, like, Johnny Depp was in that movie where he was the tech guy who tried to ascend and, like, become one with the tech? There's so many better movies you can see. This is terrible. Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah. This looks like, Black Mirror, but awful. Tackle.
You guys are saying so much for so little. This movie looks awful. Is this a straight-to-DVD B-movie somehow made it? This is getting some sort of wide release on something? Someone paid for this crap? No. Tackle.
Final trailer.
Bad Boys for Life is the third and final movie starring Martin Lawrence and Will Smith as cops. Now, first let me say I have not seen the first two movies. I don't know how I didn't see them. I think they came out in a time before I watched a lot of movies. But this was my impression watching this trailer. So I see the trailer and I'm like, wow, that's a really nice car. It's very shiny and I like the color. But why is this shot a canted angle? Why do we have a canted angle on this car? Okay, now we're rotating. Oh, the car hit the fire hydrant. The door opened and hit the fire hydrant. Okay, broke the tone a little bit. I can appreciate that. That shows some competence. Wow, Martin Lawrence got fat. That was what I was thinking when I was watching this trailer the first time through. Then it was pretty cool, the rest of the trailer. Then I saw Vanessa Hudgens is in this movie. I'm seeing this movie. I'll probably go back and watch the first two. Come on, I'm gonna have to hug a movie anyway, because this would have been a third tackle. So you know what? I'm gonna see this movie. It's a hug.
Hug.
Oh my God, Justin. This is the remakiest of the remakiest of the nonsense that Hollywood produces because it has some sort of, I don't know, brand name to it. Oh my goodness, the first ones were terrible. Why remake this crap? This is a hard tackle.
Tackle?
It's got guns. What? It's got fat, aging... stars. I don't know that I could. I guess there's guns and explosions, so of all of these, this would be the one I'm gonna have to watch. But even with that, I'm gonna have to tackle.
So William and I both triggered the three tackle rule, and Justin, I believe this among all trailers we've ever watched is the set that would be the most difficult to decide which one of these giant pieces of crap I would spend my time watching.
Well, we're at that time of the year, right? There aren't as many good trailers right now.
Summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're at a bad time for movies, and we're at a bad time for beer, as I was looking at my craft beer selections last night at a local store, and I thought, oh, yeah, that's the time of year when everything is pumpkin-flavored and is terrible. So I guess if I had to watch one of these, I would take a pumpkin beer and watch Gretel and Hansel, only to make fun of it on the show later.
Yeah, I think Bad Boys. Which one is this one? Bad Boys 37? I think I'll watch
yes.
this one.
It's only number three, you guys. Jesus.
We're trying to start the Bad Boys cinematic universe.
As long as they add The Rock, I'm in.
Isn't he legally required to be in every franchise now?
All right. Well, you know what franchise he's not in? Professional football. Let's have a preview episode of Belichick Your Premises right now.
Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Recorded on a college football Saturday between the opening game of the season and opening Sunday, it's time to Belichick Your Premises. Before we get into like a season preview, season prediction, did either of you watch the Green Bay at Chicago game? And if so, what are your impressions? I myself only watched the fourth quarter.
I watched most of it, but I wouldn't be so generous as to call it a game.
Was it?
I didn't even bother to watch it. I had my methadone hit by watching Michigan trounce some no-name team last week. So I could stand to wait till the Patriots play.
Because doesn't game necessarily mean competition? I don't know what they were doing out there, but they weren't competing with each other.
I heard people praising the defense in the game because it was so low scoring.
That is not how that works. Just because you have a low score does not mean your defense was good. I will say that Chicago's defense looked pretty good and held them to, 10 points or something? Now, I would not say that Green Bay's defense looked outstanding. Green Bay's defense looked like they didn't know what they're doing, and the only people that looked like they knew what they were doing less was the Bears' offense. We talked about before on Belichick Your Premises about one of the key, most important values of any player, whether that player has some highs or they're sort of middling or whatever, is actually consistency. That consistency is a huge value in football. And Mitch Trubisky is one of these players who has some really high highs, but some really, really, really low lows, some extraordinarily low lows. And he's just wildly back and forth. And there's no consistency there. He has no consistent ability to make plays. You can't count on him in moments because it's almost a crapshoot what he's going to do. And scoring 3 points that night against a very mediocre Green Bay defense demonstrated it, I thought.
Yeah, I'm glad you said the Green Bay defense is mediocre because that was the impression I was left with in this game, that people are going to hype Green Bay up for a little bit, especially because when they showed their schedule, a lot of their early games are at home. But there's going to come a point in time where Green Bay plays somebody actually good, and that defense is going to get torn to fucking shreds. So, and everything you said about Trubisky, I think, is completely correct. Consistency, you know, being very important. And the other thing that Trubisky is lacking that a quarterback needs, right? There's such an emphasis on physical ability at quarterback, as if it's just, if you can throw the ball far and you can run fast and you can throw the ball quickly, people think you'll be a good quarterback. But if there's anything Tom Brady has taught us, and actually, I don't know if you saw on Instagram, the Patriots posted that Tom Brady has been in the league 20 years. So for 1/5 of the NFL's 100 years, Tom Brady has been around, which is insane to me to think about.
20%.
That's insane. If there's anything he's taught us, the most important thing a quarterback can have, the most important ability is decision-making. And Trubisky's decision before the two-minute warning to take that risk and throw that kind of throw was just incredibly poor. That was not the time to take that risk. And if you're going to take that risk to toss that ball up there in that manner he did, I literally felt bad for Chicago fans. I was like, you suffered through that the double doink in the playoffs. You've got a good defense here. This is a good defense. And this is what you have to deal with this good defense all year. I felt bad for Chicago fans, and I don't think Trubisky's it. And it just shows how difficult it is to find a good quarterback. And not only find a good quarterback, but once you find someone with ability, train him in a way that he's going to make good decisions.
Yes, absolutely. Other note from that game, Aaron Rodgers looked a little rusty. Could just chalk that up to first game and the fact that he basically played no time in the preseason. But he looked particularly mortal in that game. And one has to wonder how many magic seasons Aaron Rodgers has left. Who knows?
How many magic seasons has he had?
Well, just from...
Yeah, he's been saving his magic up for several seasons now, so...
Well, just from, you know, accuracy, talent, and things like that, he's fairly magical. But it doesn't result in a lot. And you can say that's because the team around him hasn't been particularly good, but, you know, he needs a lot of criticism, I think, much more than he gets.
But the team, I will say this, they did find a way to win. They do have a new coach, so if they can continue to find a way to win, they can always prove me wrong about their mediocre defense. The most important thing is football is finding a way to win, and they did. So good on them.
Yes, absolutely. So what do you think moving forward is going to happen this season? I will give you some sort of I don't know if it's breaking news necessarily, especially because this comes out a day later. But so I don't know if you heard that the Raiders fined Antonio Brown last night like hundreds of thousands of dollars or something, which in essence voids any guaranteed money he gets from his contract. Did you hear that
news? Yeah, and I saw this morning that he's now asking to be traded from the Raiders.
Yes, oh, that is the breaking news. He is asked to be released from the Raiders.
Yeah.
So Antonio Brown may never play a snap as a Raider.
Shocking. Who would sign him at this point?
Somehow making Mike Tomlin look like a genius.
Maybe we have to reassess our takes on Mike Tomlin. Maybe he really did have a bad locker room and there was nothing he could do about it.
Yeah, that is a trick right there to make him look like a genius. But
yeah.
Mentally unstable person does something mentally unstable is the least really breaking news of any NFL breaking news you can have. And I do feel so. I started watching Hard Knocks for the first time ever because Fiza has my wife has an HBO Go subscription because she binged Game of Thrones. And all I could think was that it was depressing because they seem to just be exploiting someone who has mental issues to create drama. So I stopped watching. Because that's not what I like about football.
That's what all reality television is, though. You just summarize all reality television. Exploiting people who have mental problems for entertainment and drama.
I guess I don't watch enough reality TV to know that that was a theme. What I like about football is the heroics. It's the athleticism. It's the intrigue of the strategy and putting together pieces in order to create game plans and all the things that Hard Knocks doesn't show at all. They're only interested in the negatives, in the horror stories, in the people who don't make it, in the all the people I've watched on the show so far, none of them made the team.
But was including Hunter Renfrow Antonio Brown on so the show?
Far. What?
Was Hunter Renfrow on the show?
Not that I recall.
Of course not. Okay.
I mean, he may have been in some shots, but you know, he's not a storyline. At least I didn't get to that point because I turned it off because it's. It feels like they're trying to make football as naturalistic as possible.
Oh, certainly, but that's also why this is horrible. It's not very popular. Hard Knocks is not very popular. Just watch Ballers.
Yeah, I like HBO, or sorry, Amazon does a version called, like, All or Nothing, I think, which is their version of Hard Knocks, which to me is much more aspirational and interesting. So if you want that kind of show and you want to check out something that's a little more actually into the football of football and not the drama of people with mental health issues, check out the Amazon version. I interjected all that middleness with what do you think? What's going to happen this season? Any bold predictions?
Yeah, I mean, that's where I was going to lead you guys is this season really going to be that different from last season? Because when I look around, some things have changed, but has that much really changed? I mean, the major storyline seems to be how much of a turnaround the Browns have actually had, right? And how far the Steelers have actually fallen, which we'll find out. I mean, the listeners will hear this after, and they'll have a little bit more of an answer for this. But we'll find this out tomorrow when we watch the Patriots game. But to me, I mean, I can't really think of all that much that has changed from last season.
You had a lot of off-season moves. You got some major QB moves, like Flacco to Denver, and the Dolphins' whole QB situation with Josh Allen and things like that. So every year there are some teams that are going to surprise us that no one's really talking about. So the Browns, the sort of universal thing about football prognostication is that if everyone is talking about a particular thing, that thing almost certainly is not going to happen. And so I'm not entirely convinced that the Browns are going to be this dominant Super Bowl bound team. They'll certainly be better than they have been in a long time, but usually it takes a while for those pieces to gel. You just can't put a lot of big pieces in place and assume that they're going to connect immediately. They have to sort of solidify a little bit. So give that some time there. And then some teams that aren't really being talked about as contenders. And Justin, these words scare any Patriots fan more than anything in the world, but it would be the Ravens, who I actually think have a fascinating football philosophy for this year. They're the most run-heavy team in the NFL, probably the most run-heavy team that the NFL has seen in at least a decade or more.
Yeah, I mean, how are they going to win with a quarterback who's worse than Trent Dilfer?
So the thing by about running the ball. Yeah, that, I mean, but, I think that's the story for this season is the sort of the chess moves that have been made behind the scenes. I think we're going to see a lot of interesting scheming, especially from the Ravens this year, and it's going to be hopefully some exciting football.
It'll at least take a while for defenses to adjust, and the question is, will they adjust in time to stop the Ravens from running over everyone? And again, the thing that's scary about a running quarterback like Lamar Jackson is that, like, in their first couple, even 3 years, they can be dominant. Think about Michael Vick and RG3 and any number of these running quarterbacks who had any amount of accuracy in throwing as well. First 3 years, they can destroy people. So I think they're the team that no one's talking about who has the greatest opportunity for success. That's what I'll say.
I didn't even like Lamar Jackson in college when he was at Louisville. But if we're talking about run heavy, I'm gonna make a prediction. I think Sony Michel is going to have a hell of a season here.
Yeah. Sophomore year, right?
Mm-hmm. Typically I think he's going to break out and become one of the best running backs in the league this year. That's what I think is going to happen.
Hmm. So you think the Patriots are going to continue to do well? I do too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say seven, but again, I think they look good. I think the Chiefs look good, and I think it's going to be a lot of the same. And the NFC, I have no idea what's going to happen in the NFC. The NFC seems like a shit show to me. So,
do you think this is finally the year the Chargers actually have a roster of players who aren't decimated by injuries?
I mean, maybe, but they still have Phillip Rivers at quarterback, so it doesn't fucking matter.
I've stopped asking how old he is and started asking how many children does he have now?
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I judge his age. And eventually those two numbers will meet based on how he reproduces.
So does anyone, while we wrap up this show here, does anyone have any predictions on, you know, Daniel made a prediction about the Ravens. Does anyone have any predictions on the NFC, on the AFC, or do we just want to say, let's see what happens?
I'm excited to see what happens. I think it's way too early to tell who's you know, these first couple games are going to tell us what kind of work went on during the off season and which sort of playbooks are going to make a difference. I mean, we've talked about the mental aspect, we've talked about the execution. That's really what it's going to come down to, and that's what makes the NFL so great.
I'll make my other bold prediction on the NFC side, which is that the Falcons have another, and perhaps their last for a long time, good, great season. Unclear if they're Super Bowl bound, but I think they're going to make a bit of a rebound here. They've put some really great pieces in place to make that happen, but
I'm glad
overall,
you said
NFC
that,
because
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that division, and I was like, probably the Falcons are the most likely, because recently there's always been a powerhouse coming out of that division every year, and it's always changed.
Yeah, I think it's the Falcons' year, but if they don't get it done this year, their future does not look great with the roster they've set up. But they're sort of set up to win now, and that's what you need in the NFL, I guess, if you want to win the Super Bowl this year. So there we go. Those are my predictions for AFC, NFC.
All right, gentlemen. Let's put a bow on this episode.
Outro. Forgot we had an outro.
Well, this was originally an entire show to itself. That's why we have an outro for it too. But it's good. It works as a segment. But what did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that we built a time machine and successfully went back to the year 2012.
Daniel?
I learned that showing people what happened using videos and then being beaten in the head for it is trolling. So don't do that. Justin?
I learned that you can just throw milkshakes on people because it's just a milkshake to the face. It's just a milkshake.
That's right. It's not even a salt. It's just a milkshake to the face.
Don't use a straw.
So we hope
though.
You learned something this week. Oh, straw man. Funny. We hope you learned something this week. I'll keep the shilling to a minimum and just say go to themidside.com and get all your merch, podcasts, Snyder series, Nolan notes, that kind of stuff. Subscribe on Google Play and Apple Podcasts. Patreon.com/themidsize, where you can go to give us a couple dollars. Helps us keep the lights on. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. Represent libertarians. And then, of course, tell a friend about the show. And I'll stop singing show tunes if we get more listeners. Until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a too thick to recycle day.
I got nothing.
We got
Way
nothing
to step
this
on it,
week.
Justin.
Again, can't tell if that's real or not.